It's called the Science Podcast, and these are a couple of atheists that run this podcast. So I thought you'd be interested to hear what they say. This is only one little bit, so it's over half an hour, and I couldn't play you the whole thing because I'd have to have so many beeps in it, bleeping out the expletives.
Because you can't pray, this shit's a space!
This week's episode of the Science Enthusiast Podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby is your one-stop shop for all your arts and crafts needs, but there's so much more. Hobby Lobby can also help you with picture framing, jewelry making, fabrics, cards and party wear, baskets, and smuggled black market relics from Iraq. Because if you haven't already heard, Hobby Lobby, of course, spent about $1.6 million on bringing in illegal relics from Iraq. Part of their official statement on the matter of this was, "Our entire team is committed to the highest standards for investigating and acquiring these items." I don't think that's true, demonstrably so. "Our passion for the Bible continues, and we will do all that we can to support the efforts to conserve items that will help illuminate and enhance our understanding of this great book." And of course, they're talking about the Bible because they're trying to build some sort of weird, fucked up museum because, as for-profit companies do. But, who am I to judge? But as Hemet over at Friendly Atheist pointed out, the religious light doesn't seem particularly upset about this, and nobody's really protesting, speaking out against, what amounts to U.S. Christian company essentially supporting terrorism. And that makes sense. Why would we care about a company that claims to be Christian but picks and chooses which of the Ten Commandments to follow? Thou shalt not steal. Excuse me. And, maybe definitely, absolutely, likely, totally donated funds to a terrorist group or groups, like ISIS, because we're not fighting them or anything. So, who cares? At any rate, hello and thank you for listening to the Science Enthusiast Podcast. My name is Dan Broadbent, and you will note the lack of partner in crime this week, Natalie Newell, who is normally here. She is, I guess, again, on assignment, but we do have a recording interview already done, conducted, recorded, I guess. That's going to be coming up with Callie Wright of Gay Atheist Manifesto and Query. So we got that to look forward to. We also wanted to give a quick shout out to Marissa McCool, since she's going to be having her 100th episode as a live show this coming weekend, featuring, of course, Callie and Eli Bosnick, friend of the show, Chris Cluey, friend of the show, and hopefully future friend of the show, Thomas Smith. Thomas, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on. But at any rate, we have a God of the Week that I will be doing solo. This week, our God of the Week is, I'm sure I'm saying this wrong, Erebus, Erebus, who was basically one of the main five first beings in existence. Of course, born of the god Chaos, because, as you do. He's basically the personification of darkness and has been considered to be the first recorded instance of the place of darkness between Earth and Hades through all souls travel after you die. So, I guess you can kind of say it's kind of like my sense of humor when I'm alone by myself or even around other people. But he's kind of one of the lesser known ones, which I wanted to go for. But also, of course, because he's lesser known, there's not a whole lot written about him that I could at least easily find, because, of course, these are all absolutely true stories. These things all happened. All these gods are real, and we're not making fun of them. We're just repeating facts that anybody can go out and find on the internet. A fun fact about this guy is it says there are multiple different kind of origin stories with him, so it's not really clear, how he came into existence other than being born of Chaos, I guess. But it completely matters because it's totally true and completely happened. So after a quick break here, we are going to have our interview with Natalie. Thank goodness, right? Because I'm sure you guys didn't want to just listen to me all night. We'll have our interview with Callie Wright of Gay Atheist Manifesto and Query.
According to her Twitter bio, Callie Wright is a trans woman, atheist activist, LGBT activist, eater of ice cream, watcher of Star Trek and Doctor Who, and the host of the Gay Atheist Manifesto. According to me, she's one of the best podcasters out there. Listen to her new show, Query, as well as Gay Atheist Manifesto. And we are super stoked to welcome her to the Science Enthusiast Podcast tonight. So, Callie, welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I have to amend that bio now because since I had my weight loss surgery, Sugar and I don't really get along. So, not so much an eater of ice cream anymore.
Oh, so I was going to say, we had so much in common for a second there.
Sorry, I screwed that up. I screwed that all up for you. I apologize.
Ruined the mystique.
So I just, I presented the alternative fact bio for Callie, so I apologize. We will be absolutely factual moving forward. So tonight I think the general focus of what we're going to talk about is storytelling, though we can meander and divert wherever, you know, the conversation takes us. But so I want to start, though, with your story. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of our audience knows who you are and is listening to stuff you've done and is familiar with your work. But, you know, I like an origin story. Like, what brought you to us here? Or what
I was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Okay, awesome.
And that's how trans people happen. So that's my...
Science. That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Right. So, no, I've been an atheist since I was like 16 or 17, and I never really thought too much about getting into activism and stuff until I eventually started listening to atheist podcasts. And then, you know, I came out as trans, and I started getting involved in local LGBT activism and noticing how just overtly and in some ways very hostily, if that's a word, religious. And there were a couple of times where I was in spaces and I was just thinking to myself, like, I really do not feel like I'm welcome here because I'm not religious. Like, it didn't feel like this was a community that was for me too. And there were a couple of sort of main events. One was there was a commitment ceremony at this rally, and a priest said in marrying these 10 couples, these 10 gay couples, before the marriage equality decision, it was basically a commitment ceremony that was part of this protest rally. And he was like, if you don't know God, you don't know love. And if you don't know love, you don't know God. And I was like, wow, that's a really aggressive thing to say, given the company that we're in here, you know? And then when Leela Alcorn died, who's, for those who don't know, 17-year-old trans teen girl who ended up committing suicide because of being bullied by her parents and sent to conversion therapy and isolated from her friends and that kind of stuff. So, that set me off. And then we were at a vigil, and there was an affirming priest there that was like, I believe God was a first responder on the highway that day. And I just thought to myself, my God, what a disgusting thing to say. Like, because from a religious point of view, like, I get it, right? Like, I was never like a hardcore, like, fundamentalist Christian, but I kind of understand what they're saying by that. You know, she's comforted in the arms of God now. That, like, I get what she was going for. But what I heard was, the God that you believe in doesn't care to intervene until after this girl has already killed herself. Like, he sat by and watched the bullying and the torture and the conversion therapy and the being isolated from her friends and decided to show up after she's dead. So that was, like, for me, that was the crystallization of, you know, atheism, secularism, and LGBT stuff, that, like, I have to do both of those things, and they aren't necessarily separate entities. Like, they have to go together in some way. And then, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have an audio engineering background, and I like having conversations with people. So a podcast kind of seemed like the natural medium for that. So I was like, hey, let's do this and see where it goes.
So that, then you started with Gatheist Manifesto. And how long have you been doing that for with art?
It has been 2.5 years, roughly. It was 2 years in February of this year. So 2 years and 4 months, I guess. Ari, I think, has been on for about half of that. I had two other co-hosts initially who are no longer with us, people that I love dearly. And I flew solo for a while, and then I got to know Ari. We became friends on Facebook, and I had them on as a guest once, and I really, really liked them as a person and their contributions. I thought, you know, really funny, really intelligent, really lots of really good contributions, being a non-binary person from a perspective that I don't necessarily have. So I thought there was a lot there. So I was like, hey, why don't you come be my co-host? And they've regretted it ever since.
Well, the audience I know loves the two of you, so it seems like a really good combo. So I've been listening to your show for a little while now. I have not heard the whole back catalog, but something that has always struck me is in your episodes, it feels like you are telling a story. And I remember listening to the episode you did, which was essentially your it was your talk at NanoCon. Was that the mm-hmm. Nashville Nuns conference? And you played the talk that you gave. And that's where I listened to that and thought, okay, she knows how to tell a story. And she knows how to, you know, get people to listen and just sort of humanize the activism in a way, like to connect with people about these issues in a way that just makes it feel personal. Can you talk a little bit about that talk, the inspiration, and just sort of where that all took you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've given a lot of talks in a lot of places, and it's usually some version of like a trans 101 mixed with an atheism 101 mixed with a, like, here's why this intersectionality between, you know, atheism and secularism and LGBT stuff matters. And, and you know, sort of a smattering of like, well, here are a couple of stories that are relevant to that. And like, I really just wanted to do something different. And I was just kind of thinking like, well, what can I do? Especially because I knew, you know, I was on the main stage, but I wasn't one of the headline speakers, you know, like Matt Dillahunty or JT Eberhard. So I think they told me I had like 15 or 20 minutes. So like, I'm obviously not going to get up there and, you know, do a PowerPoint in this huge, like, overarching presentation or whatever. And so I was just thinking to myself, like, what, you know, what do I want to do here? And I was listening to the Moth Radio Hour because I'm an NPR nerd. And I thought to myself, like, what if I told a story like that instead of giving a talk where it's like, here's a bunch of talking points and here's a bunch of facts? What if I just tell a part of my story that is relevant to, you know, it being an atheist conference? And I thought, like, well, the most obvious connection is my fundamentalist Pentecostal grandma and why we don't talk anymore. And it's interesting in that context because me being an atheist is not the reason we don't talk anymore. So I thought, you know, why don't I do that? Because part of me feels like if I'm not stepping outside of my comfort zone at least a little bit, then what I'm doing is probably not worthwhile. And I mean, you know, that doesn't mean I'm like, you know, hey, I need some listens. I'm gonna go punch a baby. You know, it's nothing like that. But like, I thought we were gonna be
punching for a second. Anyway, that's a right.
That's another podcast.
right.
Hashtag not all Dan's.
So I just thought to myself, like, well, you know, what are the things about this story that are relevant? And I know there are so many people in that audience who will be able to relate to not talking to a family member anymore because of being atheist or even because of being some flavor of LGBT. And a lot of what I like to do with my activism is to trigger empathy and sympathy and trigger the feels, right? So the idea is for me to tell a story that's relevant, but that people who don't share my experience in being trans can still relate to in some way. So they know, you know, me coming out as trans and my grandma not being okay with that, they don't know that specific thing, but they know what it's like to say, hey, mom, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God anymore. And mom thinking, well, that automatically means you're a terrible person and I don't want anything to do with you anymore. So it creates a connection. And that's so much of what I try to do, is I try to draw those parallels and say things like, you know, not that these experiences are the same, but that there are parallels that we can sort of understand each other a little better and empathize and sympathize with each other's experiences and be better at listening to one another and trying to understand one another. And I just thought that story would be kind of a perfect venue to do that. And it was also just, I'd never gotten up in front of a crowd and done something like that before. All of my talks were these very fact, like I would have stories in there, but they were very fact-based. Like, here's a talking point. Here's this thing that happened. Here's a talking point about that. Here's why that matters. And here's why you should care. So, you know, I tied it in with this question of, you know, when you're reading like YouTube comment sections and Pathos comment sections and Facebook comment sections, whenever anybody talks about social issues of any kind, the most annoying phrase in the world is, what does any of this have to do with atheism? And it's like, well, the people who are on the receiving end of the negative things that come from this know what the connection is, right? We know why people are rejected when they come out to their parents as being LGBT. And it's usually because of religion. And so there's an obvious connection there. And so, you know, I just thought like that would be a perfect way to tie things into, you know, why people who are atheist and secular need to be talking about social issues. And so, yeah, so that was the story. And I just thought like, you know, this is something new. It's stepping outside of my comfort zone. I don't know if I can pull this off. And I mean, I feel like it turned out pretty well. I'm pretty proud of it. and I just, I don't know, like, and part of it is just me feeling like I always need to be taking risks, and doing things that I've not done, and, you know, give myself room to fall flat on my face if it turns out not okay.
And so, I mean, I think hearing it, it seemed extremely successful because, yeah, it's, I think for anybody to especially get up in front of people or on any platform, sort of say, this is me and this is what happened to me, it automatically adds this level of humanity to the social issue narrative or to the activist narrative. And that's why I absolutely loved what you did. And I mean, I was so glad when you made a Facebook post about wanting to talk about storytelling on podcasts, because I had written a note to myself in my weird little sparkly cat notebook, get Callie Wright to talk about storytelling. She's awesome. But I think it was obviously successful. And so what was the, was there a good response from people at the conference and afterwards?
Yeah. So, you know, I got done giving the talk and I was pretty emotional afterwards because that's just the kind of person I am. I'm super sensitive and I get like emotionally worked up pretty easily. And so by the time the talk was over with, I was pretty worked up. And so like, I grabbed my laptop off the podium and I walked down off the stage and, the applause didn't stop and I turned around and everyone was standing. And like, there's a moment, I don't think I left it in the recording, but the audio that you're hearing is, I actually stuck my phone in my bra. and that's how I recorded the audio. So believe it or not, like if you like that audio, that the iPhone audio is that good. But there's actually a point where you can just hear me start sobbing. Like I just lost it. Because I mean, it obviously touched people and that's what I, you know, that's what I want to do. Cause a lot of it has to do with the fact that I can be that deeply personal and vulnerable without risking a lot. You know, I'm not going to tell this story and go home and worry that, you know, my fiance is going to break up with me or that my relationship with my parents and my sisters is, or my sister, my brother, and my mom, none of that's going to get hurt. I'm not going to go home and lose my job because of any of that. So part of it is having the privilege to be able to be that open and vulnerable and not have to worry about the consequences that some other people do. And then the other part of it is just that, at the end of the day, I'm trying to do two things. I'm trying to advance allyship and I'm trying to make other people in these positions feel like their stories are being told. So even if it's my story being told, they know that there is a trans person out there telling these stories and that people are listening to them. And basically the more personal and the more vulnerable I get, the more feedback I get saying, wow, that really helped me. That really meant a lot to me. You know, that helped me figure something about myself out, or that helped me relate to my trans friend better, those kind of things. And so like, if people are helped by that and I'm not risking anything by it, why wouldn't I do that? And people seem to connect with it. So, yeah, that's why I do it.
And awesome. I think that's a kind of perfect comparison that you make, because it is for a lot of people. For me, it wasn't as, I mean, I say coming out as atheist, like to me that it wasn't even a thing. It wasn't a problem. So I'm constantly blown away by just how hard it is for when people tell me stories about how like Natalie and I have helped them kind of figure things out on their own in that respect. That just feels weird, but I can't even begin to imagine what it feels like for something that's so, I mean, I guess atheist is kind of controversial to some people, depending on how far south you go, but especially something like LGBTQ issues, like that's just, I can't imagine what that feels like, having that responsibility or that impact on people in such a strong way.
It's, I mean, To be honest, sometimes it keeps me up at night because I think to myself, like, you know, people are listening to this stuff and people are being affected by it. And mm-hmm. oh my God, if I screw this up. Like,
right.
But I mean, I had somebody reach out to me and tell me that they were going to play my ReasonCon talk for their parents as they're coming out. Like, that's how they were going to come out to their parents as trans, was playing my ReasonCon talk. And I mean, just like my head exploded, you know? It's one of those things where it's like, you know, when I started off, like, I mean, that's the stuff that I want to happen, right? Like, that's part of the reason that I do this, but there's always a part of you that thinks like, I'm going to do this. A couple of my friends are going to listen to it. It's never going to go anywhere. Nobody's ever going to care. Nobody's ever going to pay attention. You know, and then, you know, 2 months after my first episode comes out, I have someone come up to me and tell me that, like, they and their friend get together at their college LGBT center and listen to my show because a new episode is like a thing for their group of friends. And, you know, and this person's dad tells me that they were struggling with this whole LGBT thing, but my show's helped a lot. You know, just different things like that. Like, it's such a huge thing. And it's like, you know, I just, why wouldn't I do that? You know, if I can do more of that. And that's the stuff that keeps me going, is like, I tell everybody, like, you know, I wish like I could show you my email inbox because, you know, people talk about podcasting like it's, you know, they dismiss it as, you know, a valid medium, a way to make change, a way to help people, a way to do activism. And I'm like, God, like, you know, anytime I communicate with someone, it's on the assumption that the story stays between me and that person. I don't ever tell people's stories without their permission. Mm-hmm. I'm like, my God, I wish I could show you my email inbox, you know, like this stuff. And I mean, other shows and other podcasts and stuff have done that for me too. I mean, you know, I felt a lot more confident and able to talk about atheism listening to Matt Dillahunty on the Atheist Experience, and, you know, just on and on and on. And, so, you know, I know what it's like to be on the receiving end of that kind of thing when somebody does something that really, really means a lot to me. And it's pretty mind blowing that my show does that for other people. You know, you start doing a thing and it's your dream, and you just, it's one of those things you don't really, there's a part of you that doesn't believe it's going to happen, and then it starts to happen, and it's nuts.
Well, and I think you use your platform in such a fantastic way. I mean, I was thinking about the episode that you did during Autism Awareness Month. Is it called Autism Awareness Month? Right. Mm-hmm. But that episode, just having people on who have autism to talk about it, and you gave this platform for people to just talk. And I mean, I felt like I learned so much just from listening to that.
Yeah, and I'm still getting feedback about that episode. I had people at a convention like walk up to me and hug me crying because you know, they were able to better connect with other family members because of things that were said in that episode. And it's just one of those things, like, you hear all kinds of people talking about autism. Most of the time it's not autistic people talking about it, you know, like you're hearing about that from other people. And I'm like, why wouldn't I have a couple of my autistic friends on? And like, well, why don't you tell us the deal? You know, like, that just seems like such a sensible thing to do. I'm super, like, that was supposed to be a 20-minute segment and it turned out to be an hour and a half long episode. and that's one of the things I love about podcasting is, you know, if that was live radio, I would have had to tell them to shut up. You know what I mean? But like,
it's
my show. I try to keep it to about an hour, but if it goes an hour and a half and it has to be an hour and a half, let's do it, you know?
Yeah. And so, and that's where I feel like your show, you know, you have atheist activism, you have LGBTQ activism, but then you have this science literacy that, you know, even just having people on to talk about their experiences with autism, it covers so many bases and I think makes everything very approachable and relatable for a larger group of people. And I think, you know, when we think about science communication and all these different sort of activist places, like, it could all benefit from a lot more storytelling, a little more feels to go with the facts.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, I was listening to I want to say it was a show called On the Wire, which is basically a show about storytelling, like how to construct good stories and that kind of stuff. And they have interviews with all of the big NPR storytellers, like, you know, Ira Glass and Jad Abumrad from Radiolab and all those people. And they had an NPR science reporter on, and they were talking about how, you know, you can report on science and you can just say, well, here are the facts. And like, and that's fascinating. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you really want to capture people's attention, there's got to be some kind of story in there. And so they were talking about the story that he had done where they were talking about, I think it was the diminishing lion population somewhere in Africa. And so they were like, well, why don't we talk to a conservationist and ask him how he feels about this kind of stuff? And so it's all of the facts. It's all, here's what's happening, right? These are the facts, and this is the science. And then they actually asked an actual person who's in the middle of it to talk about this. And he starts crying. He's like, you know, I love these creatures and they're beautiful. And this is what I spent my life doing. And it's, so it's making a human connection to a story that, you know, you could very well just say like, well, there are 10,000 lions left in this area, blah, blah, blah. There's a breeding program, blah, blah, blah. And it's really boring. And it's like, you know, we do have to acknowledge the fact that human beings are human beings, right? And as logical as we often like to think we are very often driven by emotions. And, you know, if I say something like 25% of trans people feel like they were disrespected at a medical provider's office, that's enough to be like, man, that sucks. That's not good. We don't like that. But if I tell you the story about my friend who thought she was having a heart attack and was turned away from the hospital because her identity documents didn't match her presentation, that's an entirely different thing. I'm telling you the same thing. Right. But I'm saying this thing happened to this person. And because you care about other people, you now care about this issue. And I think a lot of times that's a connection that gets missed when we talk about social issues or, you know, there's just different kinds of things like that.
Well, that's even how the anti-vax movement has propagated itself so well. And I mean, yes, you got whole fucking documentaries built around how vaccines cause autism, or I mean, they fucking don't. But me saying they fucking don't right, doesn't really register as strongly and doesn't hit you in that spot that seeing these children who are not able to behave like a neurotypical child would, it doesn't hit you the same as maybe saying, you know, showing a child that has measles, or talking about a child who died because you fucking gave them maple syrup instead of actually taking them to a goddamn doctor.
Right.
Yeah, it's the stories that actually resonate with people. And that's where I think science and science communication needs to catch up a little bit with what the sort of the wooey side of things does, perhaps better than we do collectively, is they appeal to the feels and maybe do better with stories.
And it's hard because the woo people are always giving you good news. Right. Mm-hmm. And we know that reality doesn't work that way. So like, so it's hard because, you know, if, you know, you think about somebody who's dealing with a chronic disease, right? Science is telling you, hey, the best that we can do is give you some pain meds that might or might not work. Where, you know, the woo people can say, oh no, if you buy this oil, we can fix this for you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that's not as sexy. So like, that's a harder thing to overcome, I think. But yeah, I mean, you are right.
That's something that kind of hit me, and I forget who was talked about it this past week, and Natalie and I went to Nexus in New York. When you tell somebody I'm atheist, God isn't real, I mean, you're telling them facts, but you're also taking something away from them that they enjoy or something that they value and not giving mm-hmm. anything back. And that's the same thing there, is you're taking something away, like metaphorically, that, but without offering any good news, anything positive in return.
Yeah, well, and that's a conversation, a really frustrating conversation that I have with members of the atheist community sometimes, because, you know, a lot of times people ask me about, you know, religiosity in the LGBT community. And, you know, I think to myself,
I feel like we could talk about that for like 5 hours, like just the disconnect right. of how do you not understand these two things? Don't I, anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. But, you know, if I'm sitting in a trans support group and I have this kid saying, well, you know what? I know God loves me and that's the only reason that I'm still alive. I got nothing to say back to that. Because if I convince this kid that God isn't real, I have taken that comfort away from him and not provided anything in return. And like, you know, it maybe not the most popular thing to say, but I don't think I've done that kid a favor if I've done that. I think I have harmed that kid. And that's a thing that a lot of times I don't think people in the movement necessarily understand, because there are vital social roles that religion plays that our community has not gotten the ability to create. And there are people who rely on those communities, not just for emotional support, but I mean, just like basic stuff. Like, you know, I wouldn't have dinner if I didn't go to church to get this meal and hear the sermon kind of thing. And so, you know, I think it's more nuanced a lot of times than a lot of people would like to think. You know, I'm never afraid to talk about, you know, atheism or skepticism or any of that kind of stuff. I will have that conversation with anyone who's interested in having it with me. But, you know, I can't look at a kid who tells me something like that and then go out of my way to be like, well, too bad God's not real, jackass. You know what I mean? Like, that's just,
you've done nothing right. For that kid who like is holding on to something.
Right.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I'm a lot more sympathetic to it. Because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like a lot of times people who are religious, who are members of any marginalized community, really, a lot of times religion is like the main source of whatever sort of emotional comfort they have. And I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I can't necessarily blame them for that. And so it's an interesting thing to walk. You know, I imagined getting into LGBT activism in my local community that there would be a lot of, I'm religious, but I also understand this dynamic about, you know, the religious people and hurting gay people. So like, if you're pissed at God, I get it. You know, like I figured there would be a lot of a very sort of non-aggressive, non-proselytizing version of Christianity, which, and that does exist. But I was shocked at how much of the like very hostile sort of sentiment there is. I was on the planning committee for an event, the Trans Day of Remembrance, which is a day every year where we remember members of the trans community who were murdered. And, you know, they had this sample program made up and it was exclusively Christian. And I said, it was somebody else in the group who spoke up and was like, you know, not to put too fine a point on it or anything, like, but this looks pretty Christian, and like a lot of people in our community are not. And we were like, you know, there's this interfaith pride committee that's made up of affirming clergy from like a bunch of different places in Christianity and Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism, and like, you know, almost every sort of religious perspective is represented. And so like, if we're really trying to represent our community, why wouldn't we get them involved? So we're being inclusive of what our community actually looks like. Because if you look at the statistic, about half of the LGBT community as a whole is non-religious. So, you know, by talking about an exclusively Christian viewpoint, you're immediately alienating literally half of the community. And I've never been able to find numbers on the trans community specifically, but I have to believe that number is probably higher in the trans community.
Oh, no doubt.
And it was one of the most hostile face-to-face conversations I've ever had in my entire life. I mean, it got to the point of yelling.
Really?
And yeah, I'm the atheist in the room arguing that there should be more religious inclusion. And I thought that might hold some more weight, you know? Yeah. And the only reason, and I was completely unsuccessful in arguing for that. The only consolation that was that I gave the keynote that year. So like, I made sure to like give a wink and a nod to the non-believers in the room. And some other not so subtle jabs at people who decided not to be inclusive at an event that's supposed to be about the entire community. But, you know, cause I'm not petty or angry or anything like that. It's fine.
nothing like that. No.
Yeah. I mean, we absolutely are, so we're okay with it.
That's fair.
just laying our cards on the table, Broadbent. Thank you. We're the worst, clearly.
You know, and that really got me thinking, because I was thinking to myself as I say these things, because basically what I did was I sort of set up this thing where it was like, you know, we don't have a lot of control about what the outside world does. You know, we can push and we can do our activism and we can fight and we're going to get these incremental changes. But I was like, while we're doing that, why don't we take a look at ourselves as well? And so I sort of went through the list and I was like, basically a fancy way of saying, like, are we treating disabled people like crap? Are we treating people of color like crap? Are we, you know, so on and so forth. And like all of the people who were doing the things I was talking about were in the crowd like, yeah, we should be doing better. Yeah. Like completely not realizing that I was talking about them, because in their minds, yeah, they were being perfectly inclusive to everyone. When it was like, that was very directly a call out of the fact that you weren't being inclusive.
Right. So yeah, those were the people that you were addressing.
Right.
And but, I think, and they were all kind of,
over the head, yeah, just not even getting it.
Yeah, and they were all cheering in agreement. It was great.
Yeah, of course.
I think that kind of speaks to something you said earlier on, where we like to, as atheists or secular, however you choose to identify, we like to think of ourselves as more rational, as less susceptible to any sort of logical fallacy or any bias like that, when we're absolutely just as susceptible to that, and perhaps even more so because we think we're better than that, or we know what to look for, what to listen for, what to watch for if we get ourselves in a situation like that.
Yep. That's, yeah. I see that all the time. And because, you know, you read all the time, it's like, no, being aware of your cognitive bias doesn't make you less prone to it. Like, right, that's been pretty definitively shown in all the studies of these concepts. So it's like, you know, it's a hard thing to navigate, because, I mean, I even catch myself like, no, I am being skeptical. And this is the real facts. I'm not being emotional here. But it's like, again, like, you know, all I can do is do my best. I mean, that's all any of us can do, really. But I think you are right that there's some merit to the idea that, like, the more convinced you are that you're being completely objective, the less likely you are to be actually being that way. I think that's probably accurate.
And now you have a description of the foundation of my anxiety.
Yeah.
You're laughing. So I'm not laughing.
Right.
Not laughing. No.
For real.
But I guess all that, like, anybody can really do is continue to have have as many conversations as possible about these things and tell as many stories around these issues as possible and try to make connections wherever we could. And I feel like your new show, Query, if we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Just
because that feels like a very pure just storytelling show where you are, mm-hmm, you're inviting people on to tell their stories, and it's fantastic and has definitely made me cry. Can we just shout out to Marissa and Aiden, because their,
oh, totally,
their love story episode is Jesus fucking Christ.
Right. Come
on. Like, it's it's ridiculous and beautiful and everything. So can you talk about Query, how you got the idea, and just talk about that show? Fantastic.
Yeah. Speaking of religiosity in the LGBT community, that was actually kind of what sparked the idea, because I had a friend, we were just talking, and she's Christian and she's bisexual and she's afraid to come out because of the community that she's in. She's afraid of, you know, the harm it's going to do to her friends and to the band that she's in. And because they kind of run in that scene. And I thought, like, God, that's a really important story to tell. And I was like, I wonder if that would make sense to do on the Gaytheist Manifesto. And I was like, no, like, it's an atheist podcast. That's not really a story to tell there. Because the last thing that I want to do is take my friend's struggle and use it as a cudgel to bash their beliefs. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was thinking, like, but God, that's still a really important story to tell. And then I remembered that I also had a friend who is no longer Christian, but was for the majority of her life. And so that just kind of got me thinking about, you know, sort of growing up Christian and being in the closet and what that would be like. And I kind of shelved the idea, because I was like, that's not a topic for Gaytheist Manifesto. It's, you know, we're an atheist show. And I don't remember exactly how the idea popped into my head, but I just, you know, I was thinking about, you know, storytelling and, how I wanted to kind of branch out and tell more stories like that of, because again, like you said earlier about humanizing the experience, and that's what storytelling does, right? And so, you know, it sort of scratches this other itch of mine, because the Gay Theist Manifesto is obviously very much an activist show. And I try to use storytelling as a tool for that, but the primary focus of Gay Theist Manifesto is activism and education and advocacy and that kind of stuff. And I thought, how cool would it be to do a story that is just storytelling? And obviously, like, those stories can sometimes illustrate broader points about social issues, about access to healthcare, or you know, those kinds of things. But the focus of the story isn't going to be this thing happened, therefore trans healthcare. It's just this thing happened. This is how this person dealt with it. This is their journey, and then kind of trust people enough to take it from there. And I've always been a fan of shows like This American Life and Radiolab and the sort of NPR storytelling shows. And I just thought, like, you know, I want to give a shot to that. I want to try my hand at that. And so I interviewed, the two folks who were on the first episode, just sort of as a trial, like, let's just see what happens. And cause I mean, those interviews, I think I probably did those interviews 5 or 6 months ago. And I thought the interviews were great, and I was really proud of the episode that came out. I was like, I feel like this is an important story being told here, and so I just thought, like, this is something that I have to do. It's somebody who is religious might call it their calling. I don't call it that because I obviously don't think that there's anything like spiritual or supernatural about it. But I think, you know, who I am as a person is very well suited to this sort of storytelling and this sort of media, if that makes sense. And so the idea is that, if you listen to shows about trans people or about queer people, most of the time their queerness or their transness is the story. So it's, you know, here's the story of me coming out, or, you know, that kind of thing. And it's not that those stories aren't important, because of course they're important, but those are the only stories we ever hear. And so, you know, that sort of down the line leads to the idea of, like, well, if you're a queer or trans, that obviously is the most important thing about your life. Like that is your story. And that's not true. You know, I mean, and that's funny coming from someone who's life is dedicated to activism surrounding trans issues, but I just thought it would be really cool to tell stories about queer and trans people that are sometimes they're about things like, Marissa and Aiden's story, for example, is partially about their coming out and partially about their being trans, but it's also just a really adorable love story, right?
Yeah. And the
one of the last episodes that we put out was an episode with my friend Brandy, who was utterly failed by the healthcare system and ended up performing surgery on herself. These are all life stories that it's not necessarily like, well, I knew something was wrong from birth, and yeah, I liked girls' clothes, and I liked playing with Barbies, and I came, like, again, like, and I don't mean to talk derisively about stories like that, but that's all you ever hear. And so I thought a cool counterpoint to that would be like, well, here is an actual queer and trans person telling these people's stories. And because this is the world that I live in, I'm not prone to sensationalizing. I did an interview that will be on an episode upcoming with a minister who is trans. And she actually left the church initially because of being trans, because she didn't feel welcome. And then eventually came back to the ministry. And like, most of the time when queer and trans people leave religion, they don't go back. And so that's an interesting story to me. Even if I'm an atheist and I don't get it, if we're trying to understand the lives of queer and trans people and we're trying to see the world through that lens, that's an interesting and important story to tell. And so obviously the stories are not necessarily atheist based. Some of them are stories with and about religious people, because that is part of the fabric of who we are. I'm an atheist, and I wish most people were atheists, but like, that's not the world we live in, right? And so the idea is to normalize things, and again, in all of these stories, people who aren't queer, people who aren't trans, will hear parts of themselves, and they'll hear that, like, oh man, I remember, you know, like, we talk about like how Marissa or how Aiden proposed to Marissa, you know, people are like, oh gosh, my partner did this really silly thing once too, and it was really awkward. And now all of a sudden you feel an emotional connection to a queer and trans person where you may not have anyone in your life that you know is queer or trans, and you feel that connection. So you're more likely to care. And so it's
almost
it's,
like they're people too. Almost.
Right. It's weird, you know? And that's really when it comes down to it. That's kind of the problem that I'm trying to solve with the show is, you know, trans people are not their transness and queer people are not their queerness. Like, it's part of our lives, obviously, and it affects the way that we navigate the world because, I mean, we know the world we live in, and, you know, to varying degrees, depending on where you live, it can be a pretty hostile place to be queer or trans. So, like, those things are important, but they're not the entirety of who we are. And for a lot of us, it's not the most important thing about who we are. And so just normalizing it as a concept is important. And so that's sort of the subtext for all of the stories that I try to tell on Queery. So, you know, that's never my first thought. My first thought is always like, well, this is a really interesting story, and I think it could be really compelling to hear this for other people. But there's always sort of that undercurrent of like, well, this is another, you know, another stitch in the fabric of queer and trans life, and people who hear this will understand a little better.
Well, and it's about the human experience, and it's like there are just universal things that I think, you know, bring us all together, whether it's love or struggle or just, yeah, living life. And so what you're doing unites people based on, honestly, on the feels and on some really great stories. And so I mean, fantastic concept, because I think it can resonate with so many different people. And again, you're giving a platform to people who have interesting stories to tell.
There's almost kind of a mystical quality to the idea of storytelling. And again, like, I hate talking in those terms. Like, it always makes me feel skeezy to say things like that because it's, you know, because like, it's not like supernatural, you know what I mean? But it is that sort of transcendent feeling when you make a connection with someone like that. Like, I really honestly believe that some of the most valuable things that we have to share with other people are our stories. I'll give you a really great example of this. I went to Alabama a couple of weeks ago to do a couple of interviews. And one of the folks that I interviewed with, basically it was the story of him getting married and then losing his partner in a car accident. And, sort of intertwined with some legal action stuff. I won't give the entire plot away, but we went over to his house and he made some popcorn for us and we drank wine and talked a little bit before we started recording. Cause somebody that I'd met before, but didn't know super well. So I always like to sit down and just talk with people so that they can get to know me, get comfortable with me and that kind of stuff beforehand. And, so after a couple of minutes, I'm like, okay, like, you know, start pulling out my recorder and mics and stuff. And I'm like, you ready to go? And he's like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Give me just a second. I'm going to go grab a couple of things. Okay, fine. So he leaves the room and he comes back and he's got his arms full of picture frames and he sets all these picture frames down in front of me and they're all pictures of him and his husband. And he hands me this stack of papers that are all these little observations he had written about, after his husband passed. You know, things like, I tried to clean out your side of the closet today and I couldn't do it. Or, I couldn't take your toothbrush off the bathroom sink, you know, things like that. And I'm looking at the pictures of them two together and he's telling me these stories and I'm just thinking like, there is nothing more valuable a person could give me than a story, especially one that's that hard and that visceral and that tragic. That's a level of trust that is something that it's the most important thing in the world to me, that kind of trust and that kind of, you know, I'm handing you this thing that's like one of the most vulnerable and hard parts of my life, and I'm trusting you to do the right thing with it. And that's, you know, that's a lot of that is what I get out of it is you know, making those connections with other people and you know, knowing that this person trusts me to do, you know, to do, like, this is going out in public, right? If I screw it up, then I've dishonored their story and I've done them a disservice and I've done them harm. And that's something that I take incredibly seriously. And so he's now sharing this with me. And you know, the same talking to that minister, you know, one of the first questions she asked me is like, can I hear your show somewhere? Because I'm really afraid that you're just going to sensationalize things. Because I guess she'd had some bad experiences with people in the media. And I was like, no, like I'm trans
people
too.
People on
I'm
the internet be mean?
Right. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. And so it's just, to me, it's such a radical act of trust and vulnerability. And that's like, and I feed off of that. That's on a personal level. That's what I get from it that fulfills me. And I think that comes through in the interviews that we do. That's why I insist, the interview that I did with Brandy wasn't in person because she lives in Kansas City and I just couldn't make it out there. But that's why I insist as much as possible, those interviews are done in person. And I would rather spend the money and travel to talk to this person because there's a connection that happens there that you just can't get over the internet. So yeah, so that's me rambling for a really long time about this new obsession of mine.
Well, no, and it's, I mean, I think that people should be happy that this is your obsession because you're putting something really valuable out into the world. And yeah, it's an important thing, I think, to tell the stories. Now, to,
I appreciate that.
We're gonna move, like, in a minute, move on to doing like a little good news segment, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But something that I'm curious about as we wrap up this part. About you. I know we both really like music a lot. And I feel yes. like music is one of those things that helps tell somebody's story. So I'm just curious for you, what are some of the either albums or songs or artists that tell your story?
Well, I would say the biggest one is a song called The Last Lost Continent by the band La Dispute. And it's the tattoo that I have across my chest that I don't know if you can kind of see it on the
what does it say?
it says I made a throne for hope to sit. And so basically the song is it's sort of a dissertation on shared struggle and taking bad things and doing what you can to make them into good things. And the first verse of the song is the lyricist sort of, at least this is my interpretation of it, is him sort of personifying all of these things that he struggles with into this monster that you know, that feeds off of his friends and his family, and it's about him basically tearing this thing apart and using its bones and its blood to build a foundation for this thing. For this awesome thing to sit on top of. And so that's the impact line. I made a throne for hope to sit. And through all the worst times of my life, that it's a 13 minute long song. Through all the worst times of my life, I had that song on repeat. And so that's why I decided to get, that line tattooed across my chest. Aside from that, all of La Dispute is like that for me. If you listen to the lyrics, he's one of the best wordsmiths there is. Like, it's absolutely incredible the way that he words things and the way that he puts things together. And they're also apparently an amazing group of people. They printed a line of anti-HB2 t-shirts for their tour dates in North Carolina and then donated all the money to a grassroots LGBT organization in North Carolina, which is pretty awesome. And then aside from that, like, I'm an emo kid. So yeah. Like,
oh, me too. I know.
So like Dashboard Confessional, Jimmy Eat World.
I've been listening to so much Motion City soundtrack lately.
Yeah, Bayside's another big one for me.
Bayside, yeah.
Right. I grew up. Yeah, and I also grew up on a lot of like hardcore and metal stuff. Not so much that anymore, just because I'm going to be that old person that just says like the stuff that's coming out now is just kind of boring to me. Like it all sounds the same. Which is like, I know, like I feel dirty saying that because like my mom said the same stuff about all the hardcore that I listen to. I'm like, no, it's very different.
It's like, nah.
Right. Exactly. So a lot of that stuff. But mostly like if music that I feel like tells my story is stuff like La Dispute and Thrice is another big one. I'm a huge Thrice fan. So all of that stuff put together, those are all big things for me.
Well, stuff. Yeah, I was just curious. So, all right. So before we move on, where can people find you on the internet? All the places. Plug your stuff.
You can find the Gaytheist Manifesto or podcast. It's just the Gaytheist Manifesto. You can find it on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Same for Query. It's Q-U-E-E-R-Y at Gaytheist Cali on Twitter and Cali Wright on Facebook.
Okay, so instead of talking about meme pages this week for Why We Love the Internet, we are stealing a page from the Gaytheist Manifesto playbook and doing our own good news segment. Because sometimes the world is kind of like this never-ending dumpster fire, but we can share some good news. And I'm going to give you, because Callie, you know this, I have a little story about your good news episode that I have shared with you before. I figure might as well share it because it is the power of podcasting and people and all of this stuff. You did a good news episode back. I feel like it was post inauguration, like around January or something. You guys did a good news episode in the winter, which I happened to listen to one day while I was just doing some laundry, whatever. And I'm listening to this episode. I'm listening to all of these people. Are you sharing the really cool stuff that's happening in people's lives, whether it's, I don't know, like stuff about their pets or stuff about being in love or whatever. But it was the love stuff that got to me, you guys talking. At that point in my life, I was feeling some feels for somebody, and your show inspired me to actively pursue that. And even though, you know, life has, you know, taken some turns, you and that episode and the fact that you put that goodness out into the world is part of my story from now on. And it means a lot. So I love that you do that.
That's incredible.
I love that you do it.
Incredible. And that's why we do it. I think there's power in sharing good news. Cause obviously lately, a lot of us really just need to be reminded that good things can and still do happen in the world. Like it sounds like of course good things are happening. But again, like to actually hear like, no, I am a person and this is something awesome that happened to me. Like I think there's power in that. And I was, that's I think probably still one of the best ideas for the show that's ever been. I think it was one of those things where I was just like, man, I feel like crap. Like, let's just talk about something good on the show. And I was like, we need to make this a regular thing.
Yeah. And it's impactful. And really sometimes because we forget that the good is continuing to exist. And sometimes it can be a little contagious and infectious. And just sharing that, I think, is fantastic. And it did make a really important impact on me. So
that's amazing.
So yeah. So thank you. So we have some good news from our friends. Cause I asked them to share good news. So like,
and I promise I will try to not fuck this up and like say,
don't fuck it up.
The pressure is on, friend.
That'll be the good news for me is I am not.
The good news is he's not going to fuck up. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. So Rohit got married, which is awesome. And he is almost ready to, he says, publish a kick-ass paper on immunotherapy. So we've got smart friends.
That rules.
That's awesome. Callie, you want to do Trav's?
Yes, Trav's Genderqueer 101 talk was a hit at the American Humanist Association conference, and of course, because Trav is awesome, I'm legitimately really excited to see the video of this talk because it's their first talk. They were really excited about it, yeah. So I'm legitimately like really excited to see the video when they put it up.
Yeah, I am too. Dan, do you want to do Nathan's in a nice way?
Oh, I have to get back to the right picture.
You have to go to the Google Doc.
No, I have it here. I'm just doing the other 1,000 things I have to do and making sure people aren't saying awful things. Nathan has the best group of online friends, and in parentheses it says, aw.
That's insertion. Aw, yeah.
It's not what I would say. I wouldn't say aw. I'd say man up or something heteronormative.
No.
Trolling with Logic now has an editor, plus someone to compose theme music. Like, why don't we have an editor or somebody? See, this is me shitting on things.
Stop.
And he just received an offer from a publisher to turn a paper he wrote into a short book. So,
Nathan,
and again, it's on,
awesome,
it's on the dock. It says, "Fuck yeah, Nathan."
See, yeah, this is me. This is me doing that. Yeah,
and you can see, if you're watching the video, you can see me fidgeting. I'm uncomfortable right now.
You're uncomfortable with happiness. Dan is uncomfortable with happiness.
I am. And,
oh my goodness, buddy! All right, so Marissa, who we have already talked about in this episode, at this point of recording, is just a week away from her 100th episode show with Callie as a guest, and like, there's a fuck ton of other awesome people, right? Like,
yes, that are gonna lots
be there. Yeah. So, and the 100th. And that, what?
Yeah. Oh, I was wasn't I listened to her on Scathing, and isn't that like a combo, like show, wedding, or something? Or am
wedding.
I just making
it's
this
where
up?
She had, it's at the place where she had her wedding, though, right?
Oh, okay. I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And also her 1 year traniversary.
That's, yes, that's, it is, it is a special anniversary. Yes. Falls 1 day after her starting HRT. So that's awesome. Dan, do you want to do the next one? Because it's about me.
I said, my girlfriend and I have you in our lives. We also have you coming. This is, I honestly have no idea when this episode is going to air.
It doesn't matter.
So it'll be a month from now, I'm sure. And in the future, the past has already occurred. But
time's a flat circle. It's okay.
We hung out with you all last weekend. We're gonna hang out with, you're gonna come here and like stay at our house here. But also, like, she moved in with me, what, 2 to 3 weeks ago, and
your
she hasn't, yeah, and she hasn't moved out yet. So yeah.
There's your good news, buddy. There it is. Yay.
Yeah. I haven't sabotaged this relationship yet, but you know, give it time.
Dan has
good news.
Dan has
good news,
an awesome,
Dan. Good news, Dan.
Awesome girlfriend. Emily, you are Dan's good news. Stay around. You make him a
she
better
person. She
doesn't
listen to the show.
I
she
love
doesn't
you.
Listen to the show.
Well, I'll have her listen to this one because I'll tell her I boosted her ego. So yay, Emily. And yay for both of you for having me in your lives. I mean,
yeah.
Clearly, it's awesome. All right, Callie, do you want to do the next one about Jeff?
Yes. Jeff is making... Yeah, Jeff is making his first solo road trip to see a certain pair of podcasters do their first ever live show. That's hooray! Us. Road trips are fun.
Oh, that's us.
Well,
he's coming to stay with us too. So
I should say for most people, road trips are fun. I know some people
they
hate
are.
Them,
I love road trips. But so then we have Mel, who is, her husband is getting a PTSD service dog.
That's
so
awesome.
So that is awesome. I'm really happy for Mel and her husband Adam.
Do we know what breed of dog it is? Is it a pug? Is what I'm trying to get at.
I'm gonna guess it's not a pug.
If it's a pug,
I don't think,
if it's a pug, I'm gonna protest it.
Yeah,
Eli would not protest it.
I don't think I've ever seen a pug service dog, but I guess they could be.
They probably could be, but I'm guessing no. They have enough trouble like breathing. And
I gotta say that a pug as a service dog would be the worst thing because it would give everybody anxiety because it constantly sounds like it's dying because it
mine
kind
doesn't.
Of is.
Mine doesn't. Okay. All right, Dan, do the
hashtag
next one.
Not my dog.
Do the next one, Dan.
Oh, I was about to read Mel's again. We can repeat Mel's if we need. James is on a 2 week staycation and is stoked to have Callie appear on
TSE.
Oh, TSE. Gotcha.
Yeah,
note, James has been telling me for ages to get Callie on. Well, telling Natalie, because Natalie wrote the notes here.
Because I write the notes. And yes, our James, who is our friend and has listened to our show since the beginning, we're sorry, James, that you've listened to this many episodes, but he's been saying, you've got to get Callie. So,
like, well, thanks, James. I appreciate that.
Yes. He loves you, and so do we.
I think we talked about that before, because I saw you talk at the ARC protest almost a year ago to the day.
Yeah,
down in wherever the hell is Stan that was,
Cincinnati, where I live.
Cincinnati. Well, yeah. No, I was thinking, yeah, it was at
Kentucky,
it was at University
right?
of Cincinnati. It was at University
Cincinnati.
Of Cincinnati,
oh, yeah.
But it was
right.
I was thinking Williamstown.
Yeah. We went a bit north for the rally.
Cincinnati's
afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've no outside of like how fucked up the interstate system is there. Anyway, this is me getting negative.
Yeah,
supposed to be positive.
Yeah,
just
so,
fix
yeah,
your
so,
shit is
so
what
stop.
I'm saying.
Stop. Right. All right. So, Callie, you had a couple friends comment on your post. So, Daniel was one of them. So, you want to give his good news?
Daniel said, I just bought the house that was my dad's house, that was grandma's before that. It means my retired dad doesn't have to worry about a place to live for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Oh, I can
only
imagine what a relief that is. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's got to be so much stress gone.
That's fantastic.
And then John, my cat Leo, has been sick for a while. A few weeks ago, he was 12.4 pounds when the vet wants him at 14. Monday, I took him to be weighed, and he's back up to 13.8. Yay!
Yay, John. And that's awesome. Your cat,
yay,
Leo.
John.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Callie, do you have any good news to share for yourself?
Yeah, just had a bit of a snafu with my surgery that got fixed. It's a really, really long story that would be really boring to tell the details of on a podcast. But the long and short of it is basically I thought I was going to have to spend a whole bunch of money on changing plane tickets and recovery accommodations for my bottom surgery. And the office finally worked that out to where that's not a thing anymore. So that is my good news for the day.
That's really amazing good news, and I am glad that you received that before we started this tonight.
Yes,
and
I literally got off the phone 20 minutes before we got on this call here. So it was
So awesome. Congratulations. You are
Thank you.
You are very close to a really life changing experience.
So close.
And so I guess to wrap up our good news, I'm just really stoked that Dan, we get to do this. Callie, that you got to join us for this, because what you do means a lot to me, and thank you both for doing this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really glad. Thank you.
All right. So that's it.
Oh, that's it. We're done.
We did it. We're done. Now you can be mean. Ending. Now you can be negative. Yeah. That's it.
There were three or four times in there where I almost said something and I go, no, Dan, don't say that. Don't say that, Dan.
Dan, I'm going to make you nice. I'm going to make you so nice when this is all done. And our podcast is never going to end, but you will be nicer because of
we do that when we're recording good news episodes a lot of times.
It will be 1,000 episodes in. Oh, goddamn. Well, this is like TC 1042, and
yeah, we do that when we're recording good news episode. Shut up, good news episode. Shut up.
Like I could do the good news all day. I could do the nice thing all day, buddy. So like.
And that'll be the thing. Only people who watch the video get to hear that, because I'm going to edit out all the stupid shit that I said in there that can be somewhat negative. So I can be like, oh wow, he's so positive. No,
he's so nice.
I just edited.
Callie, thank you for doing this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Thank you.
This was really good.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
And if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening to our episode. If you enjoyed it, please consider leaving 5 stars on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're rating that lets you give a rate for us, because that helps us get our message out there. It tells iTunes or whomever to put us in more ear holes, and that's just great. That's what we need here. If you really, really like what we do here, you can also throw money at us, as it'll help sponsor things like Natalie taking a trip out to do a live show with me like she did this week here in Indianapolis at Indie PopCon. That episode will be coming out maybe later this week, maybe next week. We're not really sure quite yet. But if you're a patron, you already got it, because we just posted it tonight. And so if your name happens to be Michael or Trevor or Nathan or Alice or Cynthia or Michael or Michael or Magnus or Sav, Hannah or Felix or Chris or James or Sarah or Josue, I mean, you already have access, and you're kind of the best people possible to us, because you're giving us gifts of money, and that helps us keep the show going. It helps us do cool things like fly Natalie out here, and helps us both, you know, go to Nexus like we did this year and meet cool people and make those contacts and get, hopefully, get a little bit better at what we're doing here and figure out, first of all, what we're doing in the first place. But if not, that's cool too. We appreciate your continued support, listening, and all that good stuff. And I don't have anyone, or I guess I don't have a Natalie here, rather, to say hit us with a quote of the week. So I guess I have to do that on my own. And this week I was told by Natalie to quote one of the shows that we talked about during our live record at Indie PopCon. Of course, the great show Rick and Morty. And to quote Morty, who's, I guess he's kind of a scientist. He's not by definition a scientist, but you can say he's scientifically minded, skeptic minded, and that's kind of what we talked about during the show, is those scientists and skeptics that we see in pop culture may not necessarily think about. So to quote here Morty from Rick and Morty, nobody exists on purpose, nobody belongs anywhere, everybody's going to die, come watch TV. Which is a pretty great message, I think, because really, we are all rather inconsequential, and life is just what you make out of it yourself. You have to define it yourself through your own experiences, what you find important, what you find valuable. And since I have no podcast partner to kind of bounce this idea off of or really talk to, and so I'm just kind of sitting down here in my downstairs area by myself, I got two of my three cats here sitting here looking at me funny, wondering why I'm just sitting here talking to myself with nobody else to listen, except for, of course, they don't know that you people are there. But I wanted to just take this opportunity, I guess, to do something that I'm not good at, and I feel incredibly awkward doing it because I know I'm not good at it, and I'm afraid that it never comes across as genuine when I do it, because I have kind of a sarcastic and, I know, smart-assy personality. I just wanted to say thank you to, first of all, you guys. Without you putting us in your ear holes every week, listening to me kind of ramble on here right now, we would have no real reason to do this. We wouldn't have anybody listening to us or talking about us, or, you know, especially our patrons throwing money at us, or even our non-patrons through the ads that we have on here. So, I mean, you know, thank you for that. That's just fantastic that you guys do that. But also, Natalie, for doing this with me for, I guess almost 14 months now, which seems so... It seems like we haven't been doing it for that long, and I promise eventually we're going to figure out what we're doing and how to do it better. I feel like we're getting a lot better as we continue to do it, and as we meet more people, as we get more opportunities like what we had last week when we both went to Nexus, this past week whenever we did the live record at Indie PopCon, and to our patrons, you know, thank you so much, because you were able to fly Natalie in to do that show because of your supports, like directly because of that, since, you know, we're both pretty poor. But also, thank you so much to my wonderful girlfriend, Emily, who is upstairs taking a nap right now. But she's been so supportive of me, and just she doesn't know what she's done and what she means to me. And maybe she'll figure it out sometime, hopefully. But also Natalie, of course, just for being awesome. And of course, our executive producer. We promoted her today, this afternoon. Our executive producer, Alice Seishin. Without her guidance and input and help in kind of forming our voice and direction and pitching guests for a show and telling us who we need to kind of track out and try to hunt down as guests, we would probably have a very boring show here that not a lot of you would listen to. And so with her help, you as listeners, especially our patrons, we love you guys. Natalie, I absolutely love Natalie and adore her. And of course, my girlfriend, Emily, who's been such a tremendous help. And just it's just really overwhelming for me, especially as somebody who doesn't process emotion very easily, very well. It's sometimes it's a bit forced. I have to force myself to feel feelings, but it's been tough, especially this last month, seeing all my friends that I normally just talk to online, actually getting to hang out with them and maybe staying out until 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 in the morning with them in Manhattan. And it's just overwhelming to feel all these things. And I just want to say thank you, all of you, so much. I don't deserve it. Natalie, I know, agrees with me that we don't deserve it. At least she will say, at least she agrees that I don't deserve it. Maybe some of you do too. But yet here we are. Yet we persist. So thank you so much. And you know, here's to another 57, 58 episodes, or 100 more, or for 1,000 years. 1,000 years, Dan and Natalie. Dan and Natalie for 1,000 years. Natalie and Dan. 1,000 years, Dan and.
The music you heard tonight was written and performed by Adam Johnson and was used with his permission. You can contact Adam at adamjohnsondc@gmail.com. This podcast is property of Not Narrow or Straight LLC, all rights reserved.